Welcome to another edition of 5 Minutes With, and this is a two-part series that we're doing on political messaging. And as we ramp up to the political season, I thought a great perspective to share would be that of a longtime friend of mine who is the founder of Raconteur Media in Austin, Texas, which is one of the preeminent digital political agencies, Ryan Gravatt. Ryan, so excited to have you here and to cover this topic.
I mean, I'm a brand guy. I think in brand promise, brand purpose, and characters, and I love that and helping shape that. And then I look at politics and it's like, is that the same? Is it wrong to call a person a brand?
Yeah, there are some parallels and there are some differences. So I think your political parties are your big brand promises. People drift away from political parties when the parties start to say and do things that don't strike with their core values.
Right.
As a candidate, when candidates start to think of themselves as a brand, they have stopped innovating. They have stopped being an agent of change, and they have started to think of themselves as a singular archetype. And where you need your candidates to be is to be consistent on message, be consistent with their language. We certainly want to use the same hallmarks of their campaign to reinforce name recognition, but campaigns have nowhere near the same influence on its target audience as a brand does.
Brands are ones that you relate to. So I think I would think, you know, and that's when you go like, quit being a brand, like just be a person. And then it's like, oh, person's a brand, but it's that humility. I always think that sometimes even great brands that go like, we're not perfect. Like that's sometimes, I mean, this idea that there's a pedestal that a politician cannot have any like negative things in their life is it discourages me sometimes. These double standards that are put out there, I think, are really difficult, and that's a slippery slope that we're going down.
It's easier to like the office and it's easier to like the person than it is to hear the person talk about the issues. And candidates really can't fall into that. They have to be good on message, good on issues, and try to use that as their catapult to winning the election rather than, you know, their personality and their charm, because ultimately there'll be voters that just won't vote for you if you're not on message, but you are, you know, trying to be too image conscious.
All right. So think about how much money is spent on politics. I think everybody, you know, there's the stigma that it's like, there's money all in politics. And of course there is. But like, how much, guesstimate, like what do you even think that the political total spend is? Any put that into an idea?
Yeah, all the money raised and spent on all the elections across the United States in 2020 will be less money than people spend on Halloween candy for 1 week in October. Yeah, it'll be maybe $12 to $15 billion, which is a lot of money, but people will probably spend $18 billion on candy.
It's scary.
Halloween candy, not all candy, Halloween candy.
Halloween candy. Yep. You ever think about like what does a vote cost?
Yeah, that's a big metric in our industry. However, the cost per vote is usually higher for smaller races because there's just a threshold of costs that you have to bear in order to be competitive. And it's a lot less at the large level because you've got a larger number of voters turning out to the poll to elect you. So that's only something we can measure after the fact.
Yeah.
Because you don't ultimately know exactly how many people are going to vote.
Do you ever look at like how many people vote and just go like, is it really that only that many people? Why is that? Like, what is your personal opinion on that?
Well, voting's a choice, and there's a lot of political scientists that'll tell you we don't actually know why people vote. Like, what made them make that choice? We know.
Saw it in my neighbor's yard. Saw the sign.
So there's an old saw that I think a department store magnate came up with. 50% of my advertising's not working. I just don't know which 50%.
Exactly.
And, you know, we throw that around in politics with the use of digital marketing. It's gotten a little more accurate. But let's say a successful election turnout for your campaign looks like 100,000 voters. Well, there's a certain segment of those voters that you're never going to get. And then there's a certain segment
right.
of voters that your opponent will never get. So you subtract those two out and you're not really going after 100,000 voters. You might be going after 50,000.
Polarizing. That's maybe where the polarization maybe comes from.
Well, you really want to, if you're a candidate running in a general election, well, any election, like I said, there are relative choices. You really want to lock down the people who are going to be for you so that they don't migrate and go and vote for the next guy. And so a way to do that is to continue to communicate with them. And if you have your opportunity to be draw a great contrast between you and your opponent, you do it. Sometimes, you know, that language is described as acrimonious because it's unpalatable to some people. Well, might be unpalatable to people that aren't going to vote or people who aren't going to vote for the candidate, but it's very attractive to the people who are going to vote for the candidate. Another thing is voters really like candidates who are agents of change. They are really attracted to people who are going to be their advocates for them within government. And so you don't get a lot of candidates saying, I'm going to go with the status quo, just going to keep it.
I'm here to just keep trains running on time.
I'm going to vote how the people in the Congress tell me how to vote. No, they go back to their district and they learn what's moving people, what's going to motivate them to vote. They make it their own. They talk about it because it's a real issue. They're not just pulling things out of thin air.
I think there's something else about knowing or meeting a candidate I've always experienced. I think, you know, there's been a couple of times where I'm like, oh, wow. It's like, that was pretty cool. That was an interesting event. You sort of get caught up in the moment. How's that, you know, COVID, now virtual meeting?
Well, you may know we did a poll of voters here in Texas. It's on our free advice blog at raconteur.com. The direct mail and internet driven contact was the most popular with voters. And then somebody knocking on your door, sending you a phone call or an unsolicited text was the least popular. And I did that because I wanted to know what voters were thinking in the COVID crisis and the pandemic about voter contact, because voter contact is key to winning an election. So I'm advocating to my clients to do video, whether it's video with a post-production element or it's Facebook Live. Winning a campaign since the first campaign until today is about scale, and it's about reaching your audience. I think everybody's getting a lot more comfortable with video meetings and one-to-many type of video meetings. So it's really just about, can you do it and how do you do it? And so I'm advocating video across like Facebook Live and YouTube Live and IGTV as a way for my clients to leverage that one-to-many contact so that they can scale and convey a message.
Is election night like Super Bowl night? Is that like watching your kids' high school football game or baseball?
Yeah.
It's got to be for you. It's like for marketers, it's like, oh, I see my ad on TV. Or if I had a big part of that packaging that's on a shelf or a billboard, like kids are in the car. Yeah. But dad wrote that billboard line. There's all this like little, I think for you, it's like, oh my God, she won.
Yeah. It is like Super Bowl night. You've worked, practiced, trained, executed really hard. And when you're a candidate or you're a consultant like me, you're trained to run scared. And that's kind of a phrase in our industry. You run like you're going to lose. So you're just in this ball of stress compression for 60, 90 days. And then you get to the end and you're going to win. And I'm looking at pictures in my office since about 2010. I've been fortunate enough to be in the room with candidates when votes are coming in. On presidential campaigns, when you're losing, that's a tough place to be. On statewide elections in Texas, when you're counting, you know, 1 million, 2 million votes for your candidate, that's a lot of fun. That's a great place to be. Both of those scenarios they start with a lot of hard work. They start with, you know, helping your client differentiate themselves and drawing a big contrast and persuading and solidifying voters to vote for them.
You know, I always kind of think, you know, you've got a great music background and taste, and we always talk about, of course, the tragic loss of our shared friend.
John Prine.
John Prine, absolutely. But what have you been digging into? What's the latest on the Gravatt playlist. I know you got something down in there.
So I'm a deadhead at heart. I'm listening to a lot of Grateful Dead because I am grinding right now with a lot of written word, a lot of memos. And so I'm putting on May 8th, 1977, from the Grateful Dead.
Hey, check out the show from the Fox Theater here in Atlanta.
Oh, which one? 71, 72.
Oh God, look at you.
I've got a lot of them. And then, Jason Isbell and Ryan Birmingham are a couple of my, Americana favorites. And Isbell has just got a great way to turn a phrase and write a song. And so his lyricism inspires me to, you know, be brief and to the point and with a little creative flair here and there. Yeah. Before John Prine passed away, before I even knew he was sick, Tree of Forgiveness was my pick for my favorite album that I was listening to a lot.
Absolutely. I got the tour shirt from Brother Wade. Look, man, I appreciate it. Continued success for you, and it's exciting. It's just to hear all that and to kind of hear you break it down is pretty exciting. And I just think you have a different perspective on it.
Well, thanks, Jamie. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And thanks for joining the show. You know what wasn't boring? That episode. I learned a ton. I just want to say thanks to Ryan Gravatt from Rack Intermediate in Austin, Texas. Thanks to the amazing Caleb Holland for his help in producing this. Another great production from Wist Studios. And until next week, it's great being with.